BoangWorld.com, which is a podcast about web design stuff.
You can't say that.
Can I not start? Hello and welcome to BoangWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul Boag.
My name is Marcus Lillington.
Are you going to introduce me?
No, well, just introduce yourself.
My name's Lee Howells.
Everyone knows you, Lee.
Do they?
Yeah.
Am I a regular now?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
And that's on Twitter, that's at L-E-I-G-H.
Are you trying to get me followers again?
Yeah, because I know you feel special when people follow
yes,
you.
Yes, I do.
Follow.
Although you do tell rude stories about me most of the time.
And send shock cards.
That's what
when
you
did
do.
Did I ever do that?
Well, no. Every time a bunch of people follow you because I've said something, you immediately start showing off by telling horrible things about me.
Oh, it is fun though. It's so easy as well.
Showing pictures of you with hair.
Oh yeah, I forgot you did that.
I just recycle that one every 6 months. Yeah,
it works a treat. People go, woo!
Flip it horizontally, new picture.
So there you go. So here we are.
You're not going to get me more followers, Paul?
Because you've got a really obscure Twitter, what is it? Marcus, which is M-A-R-C-U-S. A lot of people still call you Mark.
Yeah.
Sometimes they spell Marcus with a K in the middle. That just looks weird.
That is how I think some European sort of Germanic spell.
It is always Europeans that spell it like that. That's
Marcus,
really interesting.
Yeah, they spell Marcus with a K.
And it's Marcus 67, isn't it?
Yeah.
The year of your
I couldn't have
birth.
Marcus, and Marcus Lillington is such a long word.
Yeah, they would use most of the 144 characters,
exactly.
Wouldn't
it? Well, I just went for 67 because I was feeling uninspired that day.
Yeah.
And little did you know how long it was going to last and how big it would all become.
Exactly, yeah. That's the other thing. You think, oh, no one's ever going to use this.
Yeah. And, well, you got in early and got Lee.
Yeah, yeah, which I didn't really think about. But I'm really pleased with.
I was in so early, I could have got Paul. I remember searching for Paul. Oh, yeah, Paul. No, I'll go for Boeing.
Yeah,
what was I thinking?
Made no sense. I get so many kind of at replies from other people.
So perhaps it's a good job then that I didn't go just for Paul.
Yeah, but there's people with hyphenated names like Lee hyphen something else. And right. they don't put a hyphen in or it strips it out. Or something. Right. I get all these random messages.
Okay. So
it's interesting.
Yeah.
It can be
so 90% of your followers are either from me or people that followed you by mistake.
Yeah. Who the hell is this person? What's he on about?
Oh, well, there you go. So Lee's on the show today because we're going to be talking about responsive design. And as he has actually done some stuff in practice, you seem like a logical person to get on.
Yeah, I've done a few bits. Yep.
Yes, so you've done a university. That's it, isn't it? A few bits, you've done one.
Yeah, but yeah, that's had a kind of evolutionary process as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's all quite new, isn't it?
There hasn't
been time to do that much.
It wasn't a criticism, Lee. No need to get defensive. No.
I've been talking quite a lot lately about the work we've done because two people...
Well, you are the salesperson, so you probably ought to be talking about the work we've done, to be honest, Marcus.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I've been doing it. I've just talked to my mates about it. Like, hey,
what are you talking about?
Oh, he's off again.
Look, I run a garage. I can't afford you.
I was just going to pimp the work. Why not? Let's do it here.
You're going to pimp the work?
Yeah.
On the show?
Yeah.
We'll get complaints.
Well, no.
What was it when I wrote?
Stuff that's been done.
I wrote about Magento and everybody had a go at me for it sounding like a sales pitch for Headscape. And I think that was because I kept referencing other people from Headscape because I didn't have a clue about Magento.
No, we've just recently released two very lovely sites.
Oh, they are special.
One is the Environmental Defence Fund, which is edf.org.
Yeah.
Which I won't give you a long history about what they're about, but basically they're an environmental charity with a little bit of a different way of approaching the work they do, which I think is very cool. Go and look at them and you can...
Yeah, they're a cool organisation.
But very, very lovely design, which Ed did, and it was kind of early on the responsive design thing, because it's go down to mobile.
Yeah, it's not responsive design. It's apparently, according to Ethan, who we interview later in the show, we now call that, we make up new names all the time and stuff, that is adaptive design.
Yeah, because I've heard those two terms being bandied around for the same thing.
But there is difference.
Yeah, and that's a good difference.
It is a good difference, which we will explain later in the show.
Is that to do with the fact that what it did on the homepage, where it adapts to the height?
No, well, that's something different again.
Oh, right. That's
something that Ed has brought to the fore. A couple of other people have done it, but Ed has brought that to the fore, and we're going to call it non-foldy design, non-vertical. I'm no good with names. That's it. If you can come up with a good name for your technique, then your career's made.
But what happened
book,
with that
books,
particular?
Talks, everything.
We'll call it the merit, because it's Ed Merritt. Merit design.
Paul, let me explain what it does.
Okay, go on.
And why it happened, actually.
Everybody should know, because they'll know what merit design
as
is.
As with a lot of designs these days, homepages tend to have a big banner at the top of them, with a big picture, because it's striking and effective.
Yes.
And you can get your messages across. So we decided we'd do this. And when we were wireframing, it went through the testing fine, but the people at EDF...
How to make a really short thing really long.
Shut up.
Cool.
Basically, the people at EDF who all had small laptops said, all we can see is this picture. What about the fold? And we're trying to say, well, there is no fold. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, there is now, because I've written an article admitting it.
But basically, Ed, in his great wisdom, said, if it's a smaller height, I'll just make the right column will push up, butt up next to the picture, and it'll reduce in size.
Using the same media queries you use for responsive design.
There you go.
But it's responsive vertically rather than horizontally.
Yeah, because we're usually really concentrating on the width, aren't we? Not the height.
Yeah.
But that's just another way it can be used.
Just to complicate matters even further. Yes. As if web design isn't hard enough. Actually, it's quite impressive, Ed's design, because although it wasn't it wasn't responsive in the definition of Ethan's, the fact that he was making it adaptive vertically and horizontally was pretty impressive, really. It must have made his kind of brain dribble out of his ears, or it would have been, anyway. So there we go. So, yeah.
One more.
You're taking forever.
I can't say, and we'll talk about a couple of things and then just say one. Because everyone will be going, what was the other one?
Nobody cares.
We're hanging on your every word. Come on.
You say nobody cares, maybe one person
cares. Michael, the client?
Maybe two people care.
Chris Anderson?
All right, very quickly.
Yeah.
RAF. RAF Benevolent Fund.
We love working for charities. It is really satisfying working for charities. Because you actually feel like it matters.
You've done some good in the world as well. You're important as a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be very quick on this. RAFBF.org. Lovely design.
Yeah.
Responsive.
Not actually responsive. It's adaptive.
It's adaptive. Yeah.
Right. Let's explain. We ought to sort out some of our terminology. I'm going to make the assumption that anybody listening to this has heard of responsive design.
Yep.
Which is a massive mistake. Essentially, in fact, I'm not going to explain responsive design because we're supposed to be making this accessible to everybody. So responsive design is basically saying that as you change the width or indeed height, as has now been established, of your website, it responds in order for it to look as good as possible. So when you scale it right down to something like a mobile device, everything reformats itself, navigation changes, position of stuff changes, in order to respond to the particular layout you've got. Now, so the idea is that everything, all the widths and stuff like that are set in percentages. So as you begin to scale, it just responds. But at certain key points, things reformat entirely. Now, adaptive design is very, very similar, except everything's set in pixels, so it's a fixed width, except for at certain key points, like the width of an iPhone or the width of an iPad or something like that, it then suddenly adapts and changes its layout. So obviously adaptive design is not quite as good because you have to set fixed points for certain devices, while responsive design will work for any device, any size device, past, present, or indeed future, that they suddenly release a new iPhone that's got a new pixel width or whatever.
18 inches wide.
Yes, or whatever. Yes. That would be quite an interesting iPhone. I'd like to see you carrying that around. It's like the good old days.
And an inch high.
It's, yeah, that would be so Apple mind, just to set a new trend. Yes, we've decided small is no longer beautiful.
We'd all be going around going, yes, this is absolutely right. I can't believe we didn't see this before.
Yeah, how did we live without it?
Although it probably won't be Steve Jobs standing on the stage presenting it to us. Yeah,
we'll all think it's rubbish.
So we'll all think it's rubbish, yeah. So those are different. I mean, essentially...
Throw a question in there?
Yeah, okay.
But even with
haven't started the show yet, by the way. I haven't read a single line off of my notes yet.
Yeah, but that's boring. responsive design, you still set the points where there's a major change, but it's kind of changing as it's going.
It's changing in jumps. Oh, no.
It's
responsive
scaling.
Design is scaling kind of seamlessly all the way down, while adaptive will jump at certain key points.
But so certain things in responsive might jump as well. You might change the logo width, size, you know, a certain size.
Yeah, or the good example is with on the University of Essex that you've been doing, you've got a situation where is that responsive or adaptive?
That's responsive.
So it scales and scales and scales until it gets to a point where the navigation actually no longer works like that.
Yeah.
And then I think we're going to move the navigation to the bottom or the
or something, or become a drop down.
Or something like that.
So there has to be particular points when you go from four to three columns to two.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just a fluid website.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's more than a fluid website.
So you'd have little teeny weeny weeny three columns because it would have scaled all the way down.
So what you'd actually want to do is remove one of those columns and put it to the bottom or whatever.
So it's a little bit... there's not a huge advantage of responsive over adaptive.
Actually... I think
with the future argument of my 18-inch wide iPhone.
Well, it's not even just
half
a future,
an inch
right?
Wider.
What you've got to think is with adaptive is a great starting point, and Ethan talks about this more, and I don't want to kind of cover everything that's going to be covered in the interview. But essentially, the advantage that responsive has got is that you're not having to. How to explain it? At these set points, what it's doing is it's loading a new CSS file, right? And and that reformats the website. If you were going to go for that, if you're going to do everything fixed pixels, then you'd have to do one CSS file for the iPhone, one for the iPad, one for the Android tablet, one for the other Android tablets, different resolution, another one for the Android phone, one for the mobile 7 phone. So in effect, you're creating loads of different CSS files, and that's obviously really difficult to maintain.
Yeah, yeah.
What responsive design is just says, okay, well, I'm going to ignore what devices are out there, and I'm just going to scale everything down. When that scaling gets uncomfortable, then we'll move things around using a new CSS file and reformat stuff. Then it will continue to scale down until it gets even more uncomfortable, and then we'll move stuff around again.
It's less CSS files.
And it's not...
Don't say less, because that's another technology. Really confuse things.
It's not reliant on any particular device. You're not designing for a particular device, you're just designing universally, if that makes sense, for whatever comes along.
I challenge that, though. Because you're not. You're still making choices at particular widths.
Yeah, but you're making it not on the basis of the device. You don't set... You don't decide, I'm going to change the layout or the width of the iPhone.
I'm not saying it's device-led, but it's still
there are still multiple
CSS files to deliver.
Yes, there are, but the difference is it's not reliant on devices.
Yes.
Right? So if a new device comes along, that's fine. You won't need to change anything.
Yeah.
That's the principle. So responsive design is kind of the long-term aim. Adaptive design is a way of getting there, as I discovered when I talked to Ethan.
Right.
Can I actually get onto some kind of show notes now? Because you just ruined the entire show.
I've ruined it. I think it was Lee.
Why is it Lee? How is Lee getting the blame? You can tell this
blame
guy
me.
Is married and has kids.
It's my fault. I did it.
Yeah.
Get on with it.
I've lost the ability to argue anymore. I think the point here is, and actually it's a really good point, it's the fact that, you know, you read all these articles on responsive design and it seems so straightforward, doesn't it?
Sounds it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, in it theory, does. Yeah. It sounds great.
It's marvellous. Lovely.
But what I wanted to do on the show, and I think we've already started doing that, is effectively talk about the challenges and the problems. And this got me in massive trouble last week when we were talking about accessibility.
Yes.
But I'm now going to repeat the process this week. I think it's really important just to be blatantly honest about the good things and the bad things and talk about some of the challenges and how this works out in practice, rather than just giving the nice theoretical point of view. Because when you try and build a responsive site, theoretically, it's all great and wonderful and great. Mm. When you try and do it on a real site with real content, things get a bit more difficult.
But you see, that's because we've come to this technique halfway through projects. From now on, if we think about it from the beginning, it's in our mind.
Yes, and it will be a lot easier.
The process will be a different process, and the pain will hopefully be less.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
so easy from now on.
So we'll revisit.
It just adds
show.
To the huge complexity you have to have in your head when you start looking at a design.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I've got this in mind, that in mind, that in mind.
Because
oh.
I was thinking about responsive design from the beginning of BOAG world. Yet it's really? Still.
Wait, you were? I thought your parents were halfway.
No.
Paul.
But
I
it's still
have a question for you.
Yeah.
Where are you at with the design of BOAG world?
I'm doing fine.
What does that mean?
Well, okay, so a few people think it should have been launched by now, but...
But you're still doing going through the process with the shows, aren't you?
Yeah,
that's the whole point. You can't release it until the release show.
Yeah.
Ba-da-da-da.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so it's done and we're just waiting on the...
No. I'm trying to do it roughly in pace with what we're doing here.
Okay.
Look, you know damn well I've got a lot of other things to do. I don't get mad. Do you know, the last time I worked on BOAG World was probably 3 weeks ago. Shut up, bastard. Oh, no, we got a clean tag and I've just sworn at you. Oh, well, I'm sure you listeners will understand and forgive my swearing at you. Right, what were we talking about?
I don't know.
Throwing us now to the language.
Yeah. The fact that all the cool kids...
I'm embarrassed.
I'm ashamed.
Shut up. So all the cool kids are doing responsive design. That's what we're talking about. And how we're all going to do it too. So we're using media queries and relative values. It's possible to create a single website that adapts to pretty much any device. Right. Simple on the face of it. So this seems like a relatively simple technique, but actually isn't when you apply it to real projects and real stuff. So at Headscape, we've been experimenting with responsive design for a while. Mm-hmm. We've already launched two adaptive sites. And those are the ones where we don't use relative values, we use pixels, but it flips over.
Yep.
And we will certainly be doing more response stuff very soon. Well, once the University of Essex stuff comes out, that'll be a responsive one, won't it?
Supposedly next month.
So as we've been working on this, Lee, myself, and Chris Sanderson, and Ed has been doing some responsive stuff as well. We've kind of come up with a crap load of questions, haven't we, or issues that have come up.
Yeah, sort of moments where you think, now what?
Yeah, so what's the best way of doing this? So what I've done is I wrote out a list of questions, and then what we did is we posed them to Ethan. And Ethan Marco, if you didn't know, is the guy behind responsive design. Well, I say behind it. I think he brought together... lots of techniques. He fronted it, and he's popularized it. There you go, that's a good word for it. And he's written an excellent book on a book apart. And the great thing about a book apart is they're short, called Responsive Web Design, which I highly recommend if you want to know how to use this technique. So some of the issues that have come up for us. The first one was, I'd read a lot of articles suggesting that you should begin by building for mobile and this mobile first thing. Which confused the crap out of me. And this felt so strange that I couldn't get the idea of working with mobile first. And it just seemed really weird. So, I couldn't imagine not starting with the desktop version. So I wanted to talk to Ethan about that. I also wanted to talk over this business of where do you start with media queries? When do you start thinking about this kind of stuff and worrying about it? The logic there was on BOAG World, I wanted to... build the website effectively and then retrofit responsive design onto it afterwards. So I kind of knew that I had to build with relative values, but I didn't want to do all the media query stuff probably until after I'd launched it, just so that I could launch quicker. Little bit late. I want you to talk about the benefits of responsive over adaptive, which we've already kind of covered.
Sure.
Because Marcus insisted on ignoring my show notes that I spent hours preparing.
That's the same as every week.
But not you're not normally so vocal on wanting to pimp Headscape.
Really?
You've gone into full salesman mode today for some reason.
I just think this stuff's
Are we
really
desperate
cool.
for work, Marcus? Is that what we're trying to get to?
Not currently.
I like the way you were.
Two or three months down the line, we're always desperate for
Yeah,
work.
That is true, actually. Yeah.
Now, I think both of those sites that I mentioned earlier.
Which were those, Marcus?
Are really good.
Was that edf.org and
I didn't say
RAFBF.
It.
Or...
Yeah, they're just...
They are good, actually.
Excellent work.
The other question that I had was about hiding content from mobile users, which was you and me, really, wasn't it? It was can we cop out? So, you know, everybody advocates, there seems to be this thing at the moment about... You know, you should make all content and functionality available to mobile users. However, I knew that some of the content on Boag would be really tricky to get working on a mobile device, and I just wanted to hide it away. And I wanted Ethan's permission to do that.
And I bet he didn't give it to you, did he?
Well, no, he was quite pragmatic, actually, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't get hard and fast. Yeah, it's all right, Paul. You can hide whatever you want.
Yeah, it depends.
No, it was
what
very
does it depend
about.
On?
Well, whether it's some of it's appropriate when you get down to like a mobile size applications. Some of it is just. I can't think of some good examples now.
Well, like a gallery, you know, JavaScript gallery. It's not really appropriate necessarily on a phone to be working.
You might, yeah,
be working the same way, and you know.
But it was. I mean, it's really woolly. It's really woolly. Because the problem is, I mean, a lot of people, you hear a lot of complaints going, I hate it as a mobile an iPhone user when I'm forced to go to a mobile website. Well, I think the reason that people hate that is because it's an inferior experience to going to the desktop version. So in theory, yes, you should be showing everything. But some of the problems I was having from a purely practical point of view with Boag World, the one example I can think of is that Boag World uses the Twitter API to allow you to post straight to Twitter, and that calls in an iframe, and resizing that iframe is a bugger to do, and formatting the content within the iframe. So that might not be appropriate on a mobile device anyway, because it's got a built-in Twitter client might want to call to. So it's adapting the functionality rather than getting rid of it so much. So there were some issues we wanted to talk around with that. And then there was finally that bit about iPhone users who complain about being forced to go to a mobile version, and we were left wondering whether it's a really good idea to give them a cop-out in some way. So, I mean, I knew in advance there wasn't going to be any right or wrong answers to these, but I just wanted to talk with somebody that had more experience working on responsive sites for longer, and so hence Ethan, and then I knew Lee had been doing some stuff with responses, so I thought I'd drag you in on the call as well.
Yeah, do you find yourself now just resizing the browser on everybody's sites to see what happens?
Yes.
and kind of...
Tutting.
and feeling quite smug, yeah. When theirs doesn't and yours does.
Yeah. Just, on the dangerous ground.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying the smugness is justified.
But it's always a good way to just see what other techniques people are using, yeah, as well, and see how, that's interesting, they've done that and that.
Yeah.
Because we're still kind of... feeling our way through all this. So.
Well, of course, because it's a new technique. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's perfectly understandable. Anyway, we've spent far too long talking. Let's finally have our interview with Ethan. Hello, Ethan.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Good to speak to you. I've got Lee on the line as well.
Hello, Ethan.
Lee, it's a pleasure.
Lee is one of the kind of... Well, I don't know what you are now, Lee. You're kind of you do a bit of everything, don't you?
I do like the word consultant. It sounds really clever.
But he does a lot of hands-on on coding and design still as well. So he's a bit of
I'm still a designer at heart.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So I wanted to get him on the call as well, because I think he's probably going to help us out with some of the elements of the Boag World responsive design, because he's been doing some stuff before, and I was chatting with the guys at work about the call I was going to do with you, and he came up with loads of questions, so I thought, well, let's just get him in and get him to join in. I hope that's all right.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, no, it's been looking forward to it.
Brilliant. So this isn't so much an interview as a kind of a vague ramble is the way that these things normally work.
It's the best kind of ramble.
Yeah. Well, essentially, what I'm doing is I'm picking your brains, but dressing it up as an interview. Right, so I'm pretending that really we're doing an interview for BOAG World and for the podcast, but in actual fact, it's me getting a bit of free advice for you from you for me to work on the new BOAG World website. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, I think I'll be able to sleep at night. That's fine.
So, where to begin? Really, I mean, of course, both myself and Lee have read your book. Which is, the name's gone out. Is it just called Responsive Design? I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Yeah, Responsive Web Design, yeah.
Yeah, Responsive Web Design. So, which is a great book because it's short. I always like short books.
It's very short. I read it in an evening, yeah, and I was very pleased with myself. Well, I think I've read a book.
You feel like you've achieved something if you can read a whole book, yeah.
That is the best thing about a book apart. It makes me feel very literate, so, yeah.
So we kind of, I think, we get the principle, and I think most people that are listening to this podcast get the principle of responsive design. We understand what it enables you to do and, you know, how it basically works and the function of it. So I kind of want to spare you of going over that yet again because, you know, I'm sure you're kind of sick of talking about that. What I want to dive in, and I think as me and Lee were talking, we're more of the kind of the things that come up when you actually try and implement this in the real world. And I know you've done this lots and have, you know, more experience than anybody doing it. So it seemed a good idea to kind of pick your brains over it. So the first question is, I've heard this thing go round the web, right, of mobile first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that. I don't get what they're really getting at when they say mobile first, and B, why there's this need to start thinking about the mobile version of your site before you think of the desktop version. What's the thinking behind that? And is that something I don't think I've actually heard you say that. So I'm just interested to know your thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, so mobile first was, I guess it's Luke Rablewski's brainchild, so I'll be doing a poor man's job actually trying to encapsulate his argument. But
okay.
He had this fantastic series of blog entries at the end of 2009 talking about the need to, rather than thinking about the mobile experience at the end of a larger design project, he was really advocating that this should be our starting point because for a number of reasons. I mean, obviously mobile traffic's exploded in the past 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And the web in many ways has kind of moved past the desktop. We're designing for more devices than ever before. So that's sort of the database justification, but I guess the other two prongs of his argument were that, I mean, these new devices offer so many new and exciting capabilities that we can actually incorporate into our design, so we might as well start thinking about those early, you mm-hmm. know, from geo-awareness to touch to just the plain ubiquity of them. Mm-hmm. You know, so this can actually inform a lot of our design thinking. And then finally, and I think the one that's been most critical for me on any project, regardless of whether it's responsive or not, is this concept of focus. You know, traditionally we're thinking about designing for the web as, you know, kind of framed in the 1024 by 768 world.
Yeah.
If we're thinking about that from sort of the other end of the spectrum, where we're designing for something that's 80% smaller than that, Luke's basically arguing that this mobile first exercise can really help us focus on what really matters, so that rather than thinking about having this huge canvas, this great expansive white space to fill with information, it really focuses us, even just as a thought exercise, to distill the experience down to what really matters. And what he's sort of arguing from that is that when you actually start scaling up from that baseline, and this is really appealing to me as somebody who's excited about responsive web design, is, you know, well, if we move up to tablets or if we move up to desktop or widescreen, why do we need to, you know, if we can establish that consensus early on that these are the most critical elements of our design, why do we need to complicate things over time? We can improve the experience across the board by having that discussion early about these are the top tier content, the really key pieces of functionality. So those are sort of the three points is, traffic has exploded, new device capabilities, and then this concept of focus.
So, I mean, it sounds like he's not actually suggesting, when he says mobile first, he's not saying
mobile before you think about the desktop. It's almost make sure you consider, don't consider mobile just as an afterthought. Would that be a better way of describing it?
I think that's probably fair. I mean, Luke would probably have a better justification.
Yeah, I need to talk to him, don't I? That's what I'm going to have to do.
Yeah, I'll give you his home phone number. But
starting out with that in mind rather than thinking of it at the end. You just start. It's another part of the process that you've got to bear in mind the whole time as you're starting.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so I've been working with the Boston Globe for the better part of this year, and most of the design was actually sort of very desktop-centric when I started. I was sort of brought on kind of more to help with the responsive side of things and the kind of the interaction design side. Like, how do we take this thing that's been designed for 1024, basically, and make it into something that could be viewed on any device in any quote-unquote context? So that's during the design reviews and a lot of the kind of quick iterations we came up with, this concept of mobile first was really helpful for us because we'd sort of bring the design into kind of a responsive framework. And then a lot of our, I guess, reviews really focused around matters of content and functionality. Like if we feel that it's valuable to have 58 links to featured articles or something in this particular module, that doesn't really feel that great or immersive. It's not a really pleasurable reading experience on mobile. So that's kind of a wedge into a really interesting discussion about, is this really valuable for anyone?
I was just going to say that's exactly the kind of conversation that me and Lee have found ourselves having when we've started working on responsive stuff. And Lee, you had a question about, you know, what to hide and what not to hide and whether it's okay to hide, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, after reading your book, Ethan, the first project I did was a university site. And, of course, a university site, everything is important. And there were lots of elements on it, like there was a mega menu and there were some contracting panels. So it was knowing what wasn't important and do you take them away altogether? Do you just reduce it a bit? Yeah, so there were lots of decisions that I wasn't expecting. Yeah. Which suddenly, and it all suddenly made me think, you know, what do we do here? This is kind of new territory for me.
Yeah, that's, I guess there's not really an easy answer for that. I mean, that's why I think that, at least for most of my work, this mobile-first concept has really been about sort of placing content first. You know, we're trying to get clients, I think, to a point where they can make a commitment that this content is valuable to any one of our readers, you know, kind of wherever they are. You know, there's some beautiful mobile experiences out there. I mean, one of my favorites is Flickr. I probably spend hours a week on that site on my phone. That's kind of sad, but anyway. but you know, it's a beautifully designed experience on my phone, but there's still like a significant amount of functionality and content that's not available to me in the mobile context. You know, I can't see when somebody's added a photo to their favorites or added more metadata. I have to bounce out to the desktop experience for that. So I guess like what's appealing to me anyway is just using the mobile web is kind of a wedge for having those hard questions about, is this actually valuable content to people on the desktop versus mobile? Because there is a lot of overlap there in terms of how people want to access that information. Mm. So,
I mean, that's a good question, is it? Is how far you go in recreating the set or providing the same content and the same functionalities you would do within a kind of, you know, a desktop environment on the mobile, you know, on a mobile device, for example. You know, there is content on the BOAG World site where I'm wondering, do I really want to replicate all of that on the mobile? Partly, if I'm honest, because of the technical challenges of doing that, and partly because of whether is that really going to be useful to somebody on a mobile device. But I know, you know, somebody like Jeremy Keith would say, you know, we ought to be, you know, we shouldn't make assumptions about users using mobile devices, and that we should provide as much as possible. And I wonder whether you kind of saw things in the same way.
Well, I guess, you know, we've been sort of framing the discussion a lot in recent years about this, you know, mobile versus desktop, you know, that we've got this picture in our mind perfectly formed of what each of those users are doing. And I think recently we've been sort of seeing that the you know, it's a lot more nuanced than that. You know, astronomically high figures of usage of, you know, people using their mobiles on, you know, on their couch at home on incredibly high bandwidth, deep periods of focus. So that's not to say that, you know, there's not a really, you know, compelling use case for designing a mobile specific experience, but I think it really depends on the content that you're designing and the audience you're designing for, and also what kind of like design opportunities you want to look for. So I think if it does get to that point that Lee was sort of bringing up of like, okay, well, if phone, then let's hide this content. I'm not sure the justification is strong enough for that. I mean, it would really depend on the site, but for me anyway, it's more interesting to sort of get into, again, like, okay, well, if we're hiding this from mobile users, what if they do want that content? You know, why are we hiding it from them? Mm. Or in fact, why are we showing it to the desktop? You know, so, yeah.
That comes back, Lee, to the point you were making about iPhone versions of the site, for want of a better word, and how annoying that can be sometimes.
Mm.
Well, yeah, something like a mega menu, it's totally applicable and usable in the desktop experience, and it's not something... It's not really something that translates to an iPhone. It doesn't fit for a start. However you arrange it, it's like a 960 wide menu full of stuff. it just doesn't work. So you take it away. So you've also got to have another way of getting through to all that content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the critical thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to hide this thing that's an extra for the desktop version.
Yeah, and maybe it's just like, you could really sort of think it as like reframing the discussion we'd always have about, you know, access for folks that don't have JavaScript, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
If they can't see that menu anyway, and JavaScript availability is definitely no guarantee on, you know, mobile devices anyway. So, if they can't see that content anyway, does your site structure actually still make that content accessible? If that menu is the only way of accessing a specific page, then... maybe that strategy is not the best one.
I mean, it could be things you've got to think as well. Things like the others that spring to mind are things like maps and map navigation on mobile devices, or galleries are another one that you came across, didn't you, with Essex? Of you know, how do you present a set of gallery pictures in a way that's, you know, actually makes them usable and visible? But the other thing that I thought is interesting is a number of people that, you know, who have iPhones, and I know I'm picking on one platform here, but who have an iPhone and actually complain about being presented with a mobile version. You know, do you think there's a case for allowing them to override your media query responsive version of the site and just showing them the same as they get on the desktop? Or do you think that complaint is coming merely out of the fact that sometimes mobile versions are hobbled versions of the desktop, and so they're dissatisfied with the experience?
Yeah, that's the latter would be my hunch. I mean, obviously, it probably depends on the site. But yeah, I think that most of the research that I've kind of like seen in the field is there's this expectation that, you know, if you're provided with two links, mobile and desktop versions of a site, the desktop version is often seen as kind of an escape hatch for any functionality that they can't actually do in the mobile experience. You know, this is kind of their way out. That's, again, coming back to Flickr, it's a beautiful mobile experience, but if there's something I can't actually perform, I need to go to that richer version of the site. But from a technical standpoint, it's absolutely possible to give them, you know, to sort of like flip all your media queries on in the mobile context. That's a bit of JavaScript that would need to happen, but it's technically possible. But yeah. I do wonder if there's just that expectation that they like seeing the full layout because they feel that there's some content that's been hidden from them.
I think it's also you become familiar with the shape, a mental shape of the website. So, you know, in the bottom right-hand corner, you may be used to seeing a certain thing, so you may want to go down there. You can just, rather than having to search through a kind of linear one column, Right down to the bottom or something.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I mean, there's not been a lot of research about expectations. I mean, from what I've seen, people tend to become fairly acquainted, especially when they're accessing a specific website on multiple devices. They tend to set expectations particular to that device.
I saw people talking about consistency and how there's a kind of inconsistency of the different platforms. You're presenting them in different ways, which is inconsistent, and whether that's actually, you know, a usability problem or not, I don't know.
Because
you're creating a new user interface effectively for people.
That's something we've been doing for years before responsive design came around.
Absolutely.
I go to if I go to Google on my cell phone, that's obviously radically different from what my expectations are from the desktop.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, I quite like the idea that you had, Lee, of when you turn into landscape mode, that might be a nice, simple way of changing back to the desktop site if people wanted to on certain devices.
Hmm.
You know, that's an interesting, rather than searching for that little link that's buried somewhere that says switch to desktop site, you know. Just
but it kind of feels like undermining the whole principle as well, so I'm not quite sure. You know, having this alternate idea just seems to be undermining the whole, you know, one solution for all.
Yeah, it's hard too because I mean device resolutions vary so greatly. I mean there are tablets that are just some fantastic tablets that are just coming out with weird resolutions, some phones that are actually approaching like what we traditionally think of as tablet screens. It's hard to sort of assume that, you know, iPhone and landscape is going to automatically translate nicely to, you know, a desired desktop experience on, say, a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's something that I think, you know, you just really have to kind of bear out against, I guess, you know, actual user feedback, you know, or research.
I think that raises another really interesting point. One of the objections that I've heard people say, and I've had somebody say this actually even within Headscape, you know, if we're using media queries and we're setting, you know, when it hits different sizes as you kind of go down, it changes the layout and changes the design, then why all of this talk about setting everything as percentages with a maximum width associated with them? Why can't you just build it in pixels and then when you hit a certain size, it reformats? But I guess the problem there is that, you know, that's fine as long as you've got a small number of set sizes, you know, that's going to work, you know, that devices are at. But as there's more and more devices and as those devices change, you know, that's going to quickly fall down as a method, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so I talk a little bit about this various conferences this year, but there's a sort of a clear line in my mind between this like larger class of, I guess, adaptive websites, you know, that use some sort of client-side technology, whether it's JavaScript or style sheet switchers or straight-up media queries that toggle between different fixed-width layouts or toggle between different layouts, and then responsive design, which is specifically flexible layouts and media queries together. Right. Now, there's no, like, value judgment implied, but I do think that, you know, it's probably true to say that every responsive site is adaptive in some way, but the reverse might not necessarily be true. Informationarchitects.jp is a beautiful site, but they're really shuttling between three different fixed-width layouts, which is fine. I mean, it looks fantastic on their site, but I think you're exactly right, Paul, that we're sort of supporting just this ridiculous number of input methods and devices and resolutions that we can definitely take that sort of multiple fixed-width layouts approach, but there are a couple things to consider. One is just like future-proofing it, you know, looking down the road.
Yeah.
You know, that 320-pixel-wide screen is probably pretty quickly going to feel kind of tiny as screens get wider and processors get faster. But, I mean, the other thing, too, is that there's been some interesting stuff happening lately. I know Paul Robert Lloyd at Clear Left and I think Chris Armstrong have been talking a lot about even stepping back a little bit further from pixel-based media queries and actually using M's, where we can actually tie the media queries to, say, the measure of a line in our typography.
Yeah.
PaulRobertLloyd.com just redesigned, and it's a fantastic example of this. You know, it's a flexible grid with media queries on top of it, but everything's sort of paced out that once the line of content and, say, a sidebar gets to a certain length, then it reformats itself or represents itself, tying not to the width of the screen or the width of the viewport, but, you know, basically what best benefits the content.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense in many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, you know, in the kind of practical real world, you know, as I whether, you know, with a project that's got a limited budget and timescales and all the rest of it, and I guess, you know, a pixel solution is going to be the faster to build for some designers. So it's not that it's a wrong option, but it's not the ideal option if, you know, depending on circumstances, I guess, like you say.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic transitional approach. The other benefit to going flexible is that you're actually producing less code, which is not really the most sexy selling point, but your media queries don't necessarily have to have an entirely new page layout in them. You can actually use the proportions of a flexible grid to kind of like slightly reformat things over time as your design gets wider and wider. So,
Talking of practicalities and reality, I mean, I guess as well there, you know, we were saying earlier that, you know, in an ideal world, you shouldn't be hiding stuff and you know, you need to be asking if you feel a need to hide it for a mobile device, does it need to be there for the desktop in the first place kind of thing. But, I mean, there are some practical things, you know, where situations arise where it's just going to be a pain in the arse, do it. I mean, there's, you know, and, well...
Just make it work. You spent all day on it and it still doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, you have... The thing that always worries me with these conversations is not just responsive design, it's anything from accessibility to whatever, that sometimes we talk very theoretically about all of this, you know, and the right thing to do and best practice and all the rest of it. And it can leave some people feeling so intimidated, you know, that so much is involved in it that they just give up and don't try at all, you know. And I sat down to start working on the BOAG World website and playing around with media queries for the first time. And I came across something where, admittedly, I probably didn't think about it right from the beginning like I should have. You know, I came across something where I'm using a third-party Twitter, it is actually. I'm pulling a Twitter field in, and that's pulled in as an iframe, and it was creating all kinds of problems of resizing that iframe. And so after a while, I just sat there and said, well, I don't think this is the most appropriate way for me to be doing it on a mobile device anyway, so why is it here? I'm just going to take it away.
Yeah,
that might not be the most theoretically best practice way of doing it, but it is kind of pragmatic in the situation. I mean, am I being naive?
No, I'm a big fan of letting the use of something, you know, actually determine how it's designed. So that's why I think, like, as early as possible, especially for a responsive project, if you can sort of move out of Photoshop and actually into something that you can actually, you know, interact with. Whether it's on the desktop or on a tablet or a phone or what have you. It's like, you know, that can actually raise a lot of interesting questions. Like all these assumptions that we had in this like static fixed width comp may or may not actually play out once you're actually, you know, literally touching this thing. So yeah, there's definitely been situations where we've sort of come across something, and not necessarily from like a technical implementation standpoint, although that could definitely be a thing. You know, we'll ask ourselves, you know, what's the point? So if it makes sense to rip that out, then go to town.
Oh, you've made me feel better. I feel like I've got your permission now.
yeah, the gold star is in the mail.
But, yeah. Thank you. I'm very pleased. Another thing that I don't know whether it's a practical thing or I guess it is a practical thing. Another thing that's gone through my head as I've been working on BOAG World is I have been thinking about responsiveness from the very beginning. I've made mistakes because this is the first time I've built a responsive site, really, because I don't do a lot of coding these days. You know, I do mainly consultancy and working with clients on strategy. But, you know, so I've made mistakes that have caused me problems, and that's fine. But what I have thought about content, and I've thought about responsiveness and thought about mobile from the very, very beginning of it. I've built everything using a flexible grid and the rest of it, but I haven't yet done media queries. And I haven't got to that stage of implementing the media queries. And that's, I think, partly because I'm keen to get this site live and get it out. And I'm almost going to go back through it afterwards and add in the media query stuff. But because I've got the whole structure in place,
right?
You know, of the responsive, the flexible grid and the rest of it, I don't think that's going to be huge problems. Or again, am I about to make an enormous mistake there?
Oh, you're in such trouble, Paul. It's going to be no, but
what's going to go wrong then?
No. I think you're in good shape. I mean, what I'll traditionally do is because I'm usually thinking about the design kind of up to a point. Usually I'm probably designing something for like 960 or 1024 or whatever. So that's usually where a lot of my comp is kind of like set out. So
that's
usually the first thing that I build is I'll build the sort of the desktop view of the site, if that's what the kind of the mock-ups have been sort of telling me. And then what I'll do is I'll kind of go back up at the top of my style sheet, and I'll actually start going kind of rule by rule and just sort of picking out the properties that actually have to do with layout.
Yep.
And then anything that I sort of think is like best fit for the top end of the resolution spectrum, right in line, right after that rule, I'll actually just create a media query and then just sort of drop in all those properties that I think are just widescreen only, for example. And then I'll basically work my way all the way down the style sheet, essentially kind of quarantining out anything that's layout specific. And so by the end, there's nothing outside those media queries that has anything to do with something that wouldn't be accessible to a small screen. So then I go back up to the top of my style sheet, and then I take all those media queries and basically just consolidate them all down at the bottom.
Right.
So then the bulk of my CSS is really just, you know, typography. It's very small screen friendly, so that if something doesn't have media queries accessible to it, or if it doesn't have, you know, JavaScript so that it can understand patches for media queries, I've still got something that's accessible universally. But down at the bottom, as, you know, these breakpoints in my media queries are hit,
yeah,
then, yeah, things get a little bit more sexy over time. So.
Yeah. That's really, I find that what you just said there massively reassuring from a couple of points of view. First, it's really interesting to hear how you've actually kind of broken things down and how you go through your CSS file and deal with the media queries. That's really good. The other thing is the fact that you do think about the kind of 960 desktop version first, because the more I've been reading about responsive design and all of this mobile first and content first, almost think makes you feel like, well, hang on, I should be thinking about the mobile element first. But that just blew my head trying to think like that. But I'm misunderstanding, aren't I? I'm misunderstanding the point there, which is that you've got to think about mobile and content and different devices from the beginning, but that doesn't necessarily mean you need to build that first.
No, I don't think necessarily. I mean, that's definitely an option, and I've worked on projects where that is sort of our starting point, but I mean, we're still in a period of transition, right? I mean, right. We're still thinking about how to design beyond the desktop, because that is something that's kind of critical.
Yeah.
So, I think as our practices get better and our tools get better, it's going to be a little bit easier to start from that smaller end. But, I mean, we're still in a point where, you know, our tools are still very much anchored in creating a fixed-width canvas first.
Yeah.
And scaling from there. So I think the thinking about the content, thinking about what's valuable to your mobile users is really the most critical point. And then however you articulate the design, whether it's pure HTML and CSS or whether it's Photoshop or whether it's some combination of the two, I mean, as long as you're thinking about content, you've started with a flexible foundation, then really the approach from there is going to be a lot easier.
That reminds me, Lee, of a question we didn't write down, which was your whole question about what you show the clients and wireframing and all of that side of things.
Yeah, two things. I suppose if you already have a website, would you advise against trying to retrofit until the next iteration, and you could think about it from the offset, or is it feasible to retrofit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know. I know you guys are probably big Dribbble users, probably, but Dan Cederholm really recently had a great post on Simple Bits about what they ended up doing was they wanted to make Dribbble accessible to mobile users. So they ended up just creating kind of an adaptive style sheet for small screens,
right?
Which is completely flexible, and it looks great on the phone, but basically still using the same HTML, but right. Introducing another media query to sort of create those alternate styles. So he basically saw that as a really great first step toward, you know, maybe something that's more fluid, more responsive, or maybe just incorporating a couple other fixed width media queries, whatever. But I definitely think there are a lot of really viable approaches to sort of, okay, we can't tackle this really huge problem. We can probably just sort of carve off this smaller spot. And then, you know, hopefully if time and budgets permit, then we can have a larger discussion about what needs to happen. But yeah, I don't think it needs to necessarily be an all or nothing thing. I think that if you're obviously starting a new site, or if you're, or at the very least, if you've got a flexible foundation, you're going to be much better.
Yeah.
But I'm
thinking about clients who might certainly sort of latch onto this and latch onto the idea of mobile, and they hear about responsive design, and they suddenly want their site to do it as well.
Which
I think it's already happened. We've got to kind of find a solution for it. Yeah, about sort of planning from the outset. I mean, we do wireframing for the desktop site, but we haven't really done wireframing for how the mobile experience may look. So That's something we're kind of thinking we need to start doing, because it's going to be a different experience. And at the moment, the client isn't really getting much input. It's just like what we see to be the best solution.
Yeah, definitely.
There wasn't really a question in that, was there?
No, there wasn't really. I mean, I guess if you could turn it into a question and say, you know, Ethan, what do you do with this? You know, are you? It sounds like with the work that you were doing with the Boston Globe that, you know, you were presenting mock-ups and wireframes and all of that for the different, for the different size mobile devices. Is that right?
Not really. So I came in. Yeah, not as such, but kind of a unique beast, this project. And I sort of came in when there'd been a significant amount of work already done on the design and the IA side of things. So they essentially the client had been approving, you know, desktop-centric designs. So the work from there was really just kind of moving the designs into a responsive framework. And then those are essentially our new, like, design deliverables. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not working in PSDs, and we're not presenting different fixed width, you know, wireframes of different devices. It's really about our design reviews. We're usually dumping or putting the work that we'd done up to that point on a whole host of devices, dumping them in the middle of a table, and then starting a conversation.
Right.
You know, we kind of highlight some of the new work, some of the potential problems that we see in the design, you know, some of the opportunities where we might want to enhance things for certain devices. So it's really just about moving away from those fixed width designs as early as possible as sort of the big, I don't know.
So they're not getting used to seeing that one set design. They're actually getting used to seeing a whole kind of set of how it can look in different devices.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's some
flavor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it'd be really interesting to, like, yeah, if I could work on a project that sort of started right from the beginning in terms of that, you know, responsive mindset, like thinking about the content questions, the IA questions, really from the outset, rather than, you know, kind of adapting the design and development process into this kind of hybrid thing, which worked really well for us. But, you know, we were tackling a lot of content-related questions during the design phase, which, again, maybe that's something we always need to do. But, yeah, I can't really speak with authority for what, like, the IA phase would look like for a responsive project.
Fair enough. I mean, like you said earlier, this is all so new and so early that I think we're kind of discovering best practice. And, I think that's the fear, isn't it, that a lot of people out there have is, you know, oh, am I doing it right? Is this the way to do it? And the reality is there is no wrong or right way. You know, we're discovering this as we go along, aren't we, really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really does. I mean, just thinking about life beyond the desktop in general, it really does feel like, I don't know, when web standards really started to kick in, you know, I really see that, or I feel like we're having a larger conversation right now about how to just generally work online. So a lot of these, like, content questions, I think, are really valid because we've gotten used to and kind of maybe a little complacent for designing for a specific, you know, context. And now we've got this sort of other thing kind of coming in from stage left about, you know, how do you actually take this content and make it valuable to somebody who is on a mobile phone or a tablet or anything? So,
Well, I mean, that's what makes web design exciting, is the fact that this happens every now and again.
Yeah, it's so much better than being bored. But I mean, I sort of said this at the end of my book, but I really just see this as, like, I tried to share some stories about working on the Globe without talking directly about the Globe, just in the hopes that, you know, as more people start doing this, we can actually start bouncing ideas off of each other. Because, yeah, like you said, Paul, there's no right way to do it yet because, we don't have enough people doing it quite yet. So,
I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, I think that's a really good point to end, isn't it, really? That you know, if you're listening to this, you know, don't be afraid to get stuck in. You are going to make mistakes as you go along. We all are. And, you know, I've certainly made mistakes on Boag World. And I know, Lee, you've had some problems with the university website that you made. And then you just when you think you've finished it all and you've kind of got your handle on it, then someone comes along and says, well, hang on a minute. We're using all of the real estate, having the navigation and the logo and branding at the top. Perhaps we ought to move them all to the bottom. And then you think, oh, no, I've done it all wrong and I've got to start again. And, you
That's
know.
Exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, your site, well, I can't tell which page I'm on because the screen's full of navigation. Oh, yeah. ways of changing the navigation depending on the device to make free up real estate. That's the next kind of problem.
Yeah, it just goes on forever. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's better than being bored.
Absolutely. I like that. The strap line for this show, I think that might have to be the title for the show. It's better than being bored.
Me to you, Paul.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much for your time, Ethan. That's been massively helpful. And, yeah, we'll let you know what the results are when we're done.
That sounds great. I can't wait to see it.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
Great
thank
to
you.
Talk to you. Thanks
Bye-bye.
Very much.
Thanks, guys.
I like Ethan. He's a nice chap, isn't he?
Yeah, he was a good bloke.
He's good to have a chat with him, and he's always so helpful. And also, I like him because he's not... He's pragmatic, which I guess I am. You know, he didn't say, oh, no, this must be the way you do it. You know, when I talked about adaptive design, for example, he said, yeah, that's a really good starting point, a good way to begin. And he talked about how, you know, that's great because you can retrofit that to an old website, which is really good.
Like Headscape.
Yeah, like Headscape. We could easily make that adaptive, even though it was built before responsive design came along.
4 months ago.
Yeah. All right. It was launched 4 months ago, but it was started donkeys years ago. You know how long it takes us to get anything out of our own projects out. Not client projects, Marcus. Obviously, we're very efficient.
God. So I'd just bring you a big spade along to huge holes.
I'm writing an article on that. About RAF Benevolent Fund, about how, in fact, by the time this comes out, it'll hopefully be done, because I'm going to do it today, about how some projects, why some projects just go so smoothly, like RAF Benevolent Fund did, you know, about how it's dependent on the client and nothing to do with us.
Are you going to be revisiting certain areas of the design process in your article?
What? What's that mean? I don't know what he means by that.
Poor Lee had nothing to do with the project. We were quite forceful.
But it was fine. I'm going to talk about that, absolutely. Okay. And about how the client told me to shut up.
Yeah.
But you know, but
so
I have
they
already,
should.
So basically, what I do warn clients beforehand, don't I? Mm. And I did with Michael, who's a great client. I really enjoyed working with him. I said right at the front that, you know, I push and I ask the question, why do you want to do that, all the rest of it. But at any stage, you can pull the I'm the client card on me if you get fed up with it. And that's exactly what Michael did.
Yeah, now he doesn't talk to him.
He does! I've got his feedback for this article. Why are you making me sound so evil?
Because it's good fun.
He did give me quite a good slap, but I need a good slap to shut me up, don't I?
Yeah, yes.
I was fine with it. I thought it was great. Right, so Ethan, nice bloke, liked him a lot. So the main thing I took away is that there's no right or wrong approach. As we've already said, this is a new technique and we're exploring all the possibilities. And I have to say, I was a little bit, when it came to Barragwood, I was a little bit nervous about having a go with responsive design for fear of not demonstrating best practice and having people like Jeremy Keith tut at me. I always pick on Jeremy. Do you know what he wrote recently, right? So I really, you know, Ed's article, right? I wrote it, but Ed's technique about the fold and adapting vertically,
did
right?
Did he comment?
No, he didn't comment. He just posted to his Delicious feed. He's got a really good Delicious feed, which I highly recommend subscribing to, where he kind of links out to really cool articles that he finds, and he writes a couple of lines in all the description associated with it. And so he linked to this article, and his response was, for once, Paul has posted something of value.
A backhanded compliment.
He did say joking, in brackets. Now, I couldn't work out whether that joking was joking about he only rarely posts something of value, or joking that this was a value.
Wouldn't bother reading it, actually.
No, I give as good as I get with Jeremy, so that's cool. I was a bit nervous about the idea of kind of doing this for fear of getting it wrong or not demonstrating best practice. But the reality is best practice is still evolving. So I think we all are making up. I mean, but I think as a technique, it's absolutely amazing.
And
I think
very satisfying as well when things start going moving around. Ooh,
and just,
it works.
You know, because
it's great.
We've been talking so long. I was looking back because I'm working through the archive of Boagworld, tidying things up for the relaunch. And I've been talking about mobile web since
96.
Since 2007, 2008 was when I first started talking about it. As long with other people. It's not that I came up with it or anything. It's just that people like Cameron Moll were talking about it. And it's like, this year is going to be the year of the mobile web. And it's, this year is going to be, and so on and so on. And it really has now hit seriously. And it's such a big area. And you were beginning to think, this is going to cost companies a fortune to create separate versions of their websites, all this stuff. It's going to be unmaintainable. It's going to be really difficult. And then this technique comes along that really hammers it and really solves a lot of the problems. So, but it's still, we're still kind of evolving it. So, I mean, no doubt by the time the new Boagworld launches, this technique is going to be totally out of date. And I'll have done it wrong. But, you know, at least it's more suited to multiple devices than my previous site was. And I think, you know, there are a plethora of devices now that are coming to dominate web usage. They reckon it's going to pass desktop usage next year. And, you know, it's a challenge that, that we're going to have to address and we're going to have to deal with. And
how do they measure?
Through magic pixies that go through the interweb tubes.
Because if you measure it by people accessing a site via a mobile device.
Yes.
As, meaning compared to someone accessing a site from a desktop device.
Yes.
By just accessing it.
Yes.
That's going to become more access via a mobile device.
Yes.
Now, that's fine, but actually it doesn't mean much. It's how much time they spend on that site when they get there. I've associated with accessing it as well. It should be. It should incorporate time spent as well.
Well, really, what matters is whether people complete their tasks or not. But that's a metric that's really hard to know.
You could associate that to a certain extent. It would be better if you knew how long people. If you associated time spent as well as just accessing.
Yeah, but time spent can mean, I don't know whether I agree with you, because time spent can mean they're lost on the website, or that they're struggling to complete their task, or whatever else. The longer people spend on the website doesn't necessarily mean the better.
I suppose it's just potentially dangerous to say, well, now mobile devices are being used far more than desktop devices, therefore, I'm not suggesting we would, but we're going to spend less time worrying about desktop devices. Whereas I think if people are spending 4 times, 10 times the amount of time on a desktop device as they are on the mobile device, then you could argue that it's still more important.
To be honest, I think the argument either way is redundant. I think the message you need to take away from this is that you cannot just think about the desktop anymore. You have to think equally about mobile. You have to think about, you know, all the devices in between mobile and the desktop, like tablets, or even these days, things like TV, you know, the number of people that are, you know, accessing the websites on their Wii is increasing. You know, I'm not saying it's significant necessarily yet, but the great thing about responsive is your website will look good on a TV as it would on a mobile, as it would on a desktop, as it would on a widescreen monitor or whatever else. It's that flexibility that I think is so nice about the technique. And what I like, I mean, but let's be honest, when it comes to responsive design, you are looking at a rebuild of your entire front end of your website, certainly the CSS of your website, in order to get it to work like that, which is great for new clients that are coming in. I think most of the time now we will be recommending that they build their website responsive. But for existing clients, then they've got a problem because they're not at the position where they're undertaking a redesign of their front end. But that's where I'm quite interested in adaptive design, like we've done for RAF Benevolent Fund, where you've just said, okay, well, we'll do a desktop version and we'll have a switch point when the resolution is under 400 pixels or whatever width, and we'll flip to a mobile version, because that can be retrofitted onto any website. So that's why you, Mr. Salesman, need to be going to all our existing clients and saying, well, why don't you have an adaptive website as a first step towards responsive? Because the other great thing about it is that, you know, that a lot of the stuff, the thinking that you do in the adaptive design and the process will apply when eventually you do a redesign and make the whole site responsive. So, you know, I actually...
You explain it so well, though, Paul, so I reckon you should call them all up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just do everything. That's my job.
I do everything, yeah. Okay.
I do. I just, you know, one minute I'm working with designers, next minute I'm selling, I'm just multi-talented.
Yeah, that's right.
So there we go. I think we're done.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, Jack. But do you say Jack of all trades like it's a bad thing?
Master of none.
Read my article on Smashing Magazine in defence of the generalist.
His finger at me.
I am. I'm wagging. Defence of the generalist. I'm a great fan of that.
What am I?
You're not even a generalist.
You have to be a generalist, because then, only then can you kind of synthesise different bits together.
That's a whole nother podcast, but I agree with you. As three generalists sitting around the table...
We have to defend the generalist position, really.
Please, we do have a role in the world.
I just wanted to mention quickly an article I read about mobile devices in Asia and how we kind of sit in our little bubble here.
Oh, yeah.
And how they're all using these kind of generic tablets and mobile phones and Opera as the main kind of interface for everything. And that's just kind of mind-boggling, because then they're just relying on the web on all this stuff. And the responsive technique becomes so important then.
It does. Yeah, I mean, as soon as you start talking about an international audience, Asia, you know, they going back to this point about, you know, what's the main thing people are actually using on a daily basis. In Asia, it is mobile devices.
Yeah.
In Africa as well, you know, it's the mobile network. They don't have broadband. They don't even have landlines for dial-up. It is mobile. Yeah, mobile is the thing.
And they're not iPhones, they're not iPads.
No,
they're just
shitty little things in Africa. I mean, in Asia, they're really cool stuff, but... You know, adapting for all these devices is so, so important if you're international. But even in the UK now, it's you know, massively important.
And desktops are going to get less prevalent, aren't they? It's going to be... tablets are going to take off more and more and more.
Yeah. I mean, but then what we haven't even touched upon, because we've been concentrating on responsive design rather than specifically mobile, and there's a whole issue then about context and about... You know, suddenly people, even if you're using a laptop, you might be sitting on the sofa in your lounge with the TV blaring and the kids running around your feet, you know. So, which means your concentration is different. You know, one step at a time. Otherwise, your head really would explode with all this stuff. But it's really interesting. This is what I love about the web, is that it's always new challenges, always new things to think about.
Absolutely. Always changing. Always keeping you on your toes.
Absolutely. And so on that really high point, we will now ruin it by listening to Marcus's joke.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I switched off.
are you still using the same list of jokes?
Yeah, I only did one.
You're going to keep make this stretch
these
out
the
for
best
as long as
10
possible.
Jokes from the Edinburgh Fringe ruined by me. This one's from Tim Vine. Crime in multi-story car parks.
Right,
it's wrong on so many levels.
Okay, and on that note, thank you very much for listening, and we will be talking to you again in 2 weeks' time, where we will be looking at the actual build process, and in particular WordPress. Oh,